Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to Chef's Story. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and today we are broadcasting from the International Culinary Center in Soho, New York. And my guest is really a woman I have been dying to talk to for many years. She teaches here at the center, and she is just beloved and incredibly respected by the chef community, Hiroko Shimbo. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you very much, Dorothy, and I am very, very excited and honored to be here.
Well, we are very honored to have you, because I think as many of our professionals look to you to interpret and understand not only Japanese cooking, but Japanese cooking in its culture. And I hope today we get your story and you help us towards the end to really understand some of the fundamental differences and maybe misconceptions about Japanese food. I just want to tell our public listening that Hiroko is really well known for her cookbooks. And she's they're highly awarded. Back in 2000, she published The Japanese Kitchen, and that was nominated for an award by IACP. In 2005, she wrote The Sushi Experience. But it was in 2013, her latest book, Hiroko's American Kitchen, Cooking with Japanese Flavors, she won the IACP Cookbook Award for Best American Cookbook. So congratulations on all of that. And I have to say that Hiroko is a very big consultant here and really all over the United States and is a very big writer. So let's get right into it. Hiroko, I take it you were born in Japan, but what part of Japan? And what was your early childhood like?
Okay. I was born in Kanazawa City, which is in Ishikawa Prefecture on the Japan Sea. Ishikawa Prefecture is kind of from Kyoto. It is direct across northwest. Mm-hmm. And my father was a medical student at the university hospital. So that's why he was there, they were there, and I was born. And I was born at the, they are very, a kind of cell, making, started their life together. So doesn't have much money. And my mother told me that the first salary of my father was 4,000 yen, which is $40 back.
For how long? Years?
How long? I don't know.
A week? For, a month?
A year? A month.
A month? Wow.
So, and they were renting one room at the temple.
Oh.
Ground.
Yes.
So I was kind of born on the
temple ground. Oh my gosh. Do you have early memories of the temple? Or did you move from there?
Yeah, I don't have much early memories. So many people has, when I was 3 years old, 5 years old, they can tell these stories. But not much. Then we moved to Tokyo because my father wanted to open his own clinic. Mm-hmm. Then I have 7 years old. I have 6 years old. I have very clear memory about moving into big house. The first floor was clinic. Uh-huh. Second floor was residential.
Residential, where you lived above the store.
Yeah.
So what's it like to be a young girl in Tokyo? What were the things you loved doing? What was your fun time? How strict was school?
The school, funny, school wasn't strict, but my mother worked along with him, and my father did surgery. So she was cooking, we are having inpatients living with us.
Oh.
So my mother did breakfast, lunch, dinner meals for them and for us. And my mother was very busy, so she let us do whichever we loved to do. But she's an education mother, so she sent us to the after-school juku, which means a cram school, to study more. Uh-huh. But the teacher was fantastic, Nakamura Sensei. He let us to play in addition to study.
Oh.
And it was just going there and learning, playing with the kids.
What kind of games would you play?
Oh, wow. That's what did we do? I don't know. Just running around. Well, I don't particularly remember.
Just chasing each other?
Chasing each other. And some kind of this cram school was held at the elementary school using the classroom.
Uh-huh.
So we did just some physical
physical exercise,
exercises, plays.
So at least he didn't make you sit behind a desk. So what kind of clothes would you wear? Did you have a uniform?
Yes, we did. Elementary school, no uniform, public.
Mm-hmm.
I went public, mm-hmm. university, private. So elementary, no uniform. Junior, senior, uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And the school life is, not much fun compared to the ones here in America.
Here they may be too much fun.
Or maybe too much.
How would you compare a young Japanese teenager today with an American teenager as far as their attitudes and their eating habits maybe?
Right. So the younger generations, they have changed compared to my time. Or maybe they became more individualist, selfish. But still, Japan was, our history is very long, 1,000 years old. And up until the end of 19th century, our society was feudalistic society. So when you see Japanese people like me dressed in Western clothes, and they think, oh, they look like like us, but I am very reservationist, conservatives. Mm-hmm. The younger people are still carrying these
values.
A kind of values, mm-hmm. Identity, or we cannot change because we are not exposed to other people. Japan is an island,
mm-hmm.
and we welcome people, but we always say, okay, you will go back, so goodbye. So when you are here, we treat you very well. But when someone starts to decide to stay, and then why you are outsiders, why you want to come to Japan, kind of. And that kind of mentality, we are still younger people has, and very conservative, and still bound by traditional thinking.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to women, the opportunity is very low.
You don't have many opportunities?
Career opportunities.
Really, there's a very big discrepancy between men and women opportunities?
Yes, and it is a feudalistic country and a very male chauvinistic prejudice. So what's happening to women today is they, in the past, women should marry at the age of 24, 5, 6, 7. And after you become Christmas cake, nobody will take you. And the women, working women, they know that they can delay the marriage. Marriage means a kind of
prison?
Going to the prison.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Even so, today.
Even today. So they shun getting married. If I marry, I cannot use my money freely.
Yeah, freely. You have to do what your husband says?
Right. And I want to do shopping. I want to go to abroad. I want to spend my time by myself or with my friends. And this kind of things, parasite singles, the media started to mention about this young generation, mm-hmm. Especially women. And the men are the same, between 22 and 34, about 33% are living with parents still. And they don't want to marry, or they cannot find someone to marry. And this was already 15 years old, the syndrome. And they ages. When they age, they realize that there is no wonderful life being alone. Mm-hmm. They have to take care of their parents, mm-hmm. and they have
single. Nothing. They're single because
right.
It's a very family-based society.
Right.
So everyone has their own family, and they're left just to take care of their old.
Right.
Who will take care of them?
The kids or the
the kids, yeah, or the person, the single person.
Single person have to take care of the aging
people. But when they become aging,
and then the government.
The government takes care of them. Whoa. So as a young girl, when did you come to the United States?
Very late.
Very late. So
Maybe I was a parasite single or after.
They call it a parasite single. Wow. That's such a loaded term.
Right.
So there...
I was working, and after graduating from university, my major was education, and education and English. I found a secretarial job at the American finance company, and became just a secretary. And every day is answering the phones. Typing, doing telex.
Oh,
that's, who knows telex?
Yes, right. I do. But that was a while back.
Thank you. Yes, way back. So then at the age of 26, I think I left because even at the company, they say, what are you doing? Well, why don't you get married? So I quit. And I looked for something to do. Mm-hmm. And at that time, my father was receiving a kind of a Fulbright doctors mm-hmm. from America, from Europe. And they come to our house. Mm-hmm. My mother loves to cook them. So, and one of them started to say, why don't you, if you are parasite single, or no, there is not such term back then. Why don't you teach me English? Oh, no, Japanese.
Japanese, yeah.
And I don't know how to do it, so I went to the school mm-hmm. to get the certificate, and I taught about 5 years or something.
Japanese
language.
In Tokyo. Yeah.
And the interesting thing is teaching a Japanese language represents how we think, mm-hmm. what's our history, mm-hmm. what's the society. Mm. The language has female, male speech. Male always speaks down, female speaks up. And informal, formal speech.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the size who sits on the top of the hierarchy,
yes.
the society.
Uh-huh.
And when people start to study language, they are interested in history, culture, food, and this food stuff became so...
How you got so involved in food,
yeah.
is because you had to explain it to your,
right. exactly.
your students. Okay, we're going to take a little break here, and when we come
okay.
back...
Thank you.
we'll learn more about the food, how you became a food educator. Welcome back. You're listening to Chef Story, and today my guest is Hiroko Shimbo, and we're talking about her famous, fabulous story of growing up in Japan and learning about the expectations of having to get married or being called a parasitic single, which... Oh my gosh! I don't even know how to respond to that as an American woman. So, did you want to leave Japan because of that oppression? Did you enjoy your culture because you celebrate it and express it so well here in the United States for us? Did you have a conflict inside you about?
It is this? Interesting. Maybe I wanted to get out, or my mother. Was raised by progressive thinking parents. Mm-hmm. They are from Niigata Prefecture, one of the big port cities on the Japan Sea. Maybe after next of Kanazawa Prefecture, where I lived. And my grandfather graduated from Waseda University, which was founded in 1882. It is a private university and one of the top in Japan. And he is one of the eight graduates from this school. So after studying in Tokyo, he was asked to stay, but he had to go back to manage his business. And he was... a pediatrician. He became a pediatrician and married with a woman who was also very modern kind of with modern thinking. Or they became very close to a missionary family in their neighbor. He was asked to come to school to. As a nursery school doctor.
Nursery school doctor, yeah.
For the church. So my mother's mother, Setsu, also went to... She was invited by the ministry wife, just a couple of volunteer works. So she loved to go there often mm-hmm. because back then... How many years ago? My mother is 89 years old. The Japan was so very heavily feudalistic, much more than today. And the woman was...
so low
so
on the totem pole, yeah.
So when she went there, she was treated kind of equally.
Oh.
And found volunteer works very pleasant. And she brought back recipes, some Western recipes, back to home. And she started to make chicken stocks or omelette kind of things.
Wow.
And the patient who couldn't afford paying brings live chicken to her home, pricks the hair, and
and them puts it in the pot. It's a barter. Right. Yeah.
So, a kind of both of them are very much impressed with Western culture, food, the relationship of the people. That's a kind of the seed was planted to my mother.
Yes.
And she was educated in Tokyo until B-29 hit in Tokyo. She went back to her home. So I think my mother couldn't do much, but because I took my mother's kind of seed, so I could have planted it here in America. But that's how I interpret
her. Her curiosity and actually her challenge of going to something that was not traditional, even in such a structured society. So let me ask you something. I'm intrigued with Japanese food, as are most Americans. And I'm also bewildered, because people will put a Japanese dish in front of me, and if it's not sushi or sashimi or tempura, the very typical ordinary things you see in a Japanese restaurant, I'm looking at it and I think, oh, that's really interesting. And I put it in my mouth and I eat it and it's really interesting. And I don't respond to it the way I respond to Western food. I don't have this sense of, oh, that's so unctuous or delicious or whatever. Because of the fermentation, I think.
Okay.
Because of the flavoring elements are different. They're just so dramatically different than Western flavorings.
Yes.
And I think I used to live in Thailand for 3 years. And so it took me a very long time to understand Thai food, to really come to love it. I mean, you could come and love a dish. They like fried rice. That's mainly about frying, deep frying and eating. Yeah. But, other dishes that were on the edge, more weird, we would say, it took a very long time for my palate to get used to fish sauce and even coriander in those days. Fresh coriander was a new thing. And what you eat for breakfast is so different from what people eat in the West on times of days of what you're eating. And I had a lot of discussions with Asian chef friends of mine saying, do you think a Westerner can ever develop their palate as well as an Easterner who grew up with it?
Uh-huh.
And you go into Oya, Tim Cushman,
yes,
or David Kinch now over in Manresa is doing more Japanese food. They go to Japan and they come back and they try to recreate dishes. It's like going to France and coming back and trying to recreate the dish. But my question, I'm sorry I'm going on so long, is, is there, when we try to do Japanese food, is it food with an accent? It's like, can we overcome and really be able to produce food like a native? And I think that's hard to do even with French food that we have in similar cultures, but is there always, can you always tell that there's an American hand behind a Japanese dish? And what does that do with your palate? And vice versa when you eat Western food. So I don't know what the question is there, but it's like, what happens in your mouth? Is your mouth flexible enough to really switch languages, switch cultures?
Right.
Do you have an opinion on that?
Oh, wow. That's very interesting question. So interesting and hard to answer to question. So say, what makes Japanese cooking so alien, different from even other Asian cuisine, is because we always say Japanese cooking is based on dashi or water and fire-based cooking. the other world cuisine is based on oil and fire cooking. So what we, dashi and water and fire means so many dishes are made from the basic flavor is dashi, which is Japanese stock, and made from kelp and bonito, the fish flakes. And we use, instead of deep frying, came from Portuguese, the techniques. And most of the techniques used to make Japanese dishes are simmering, braising, steaming, blanching, raw. It doesn't use much oil. If oil is used, maybe a little, or some nuts or seeds-based kind of, we grind sesame seeds to make a kind of cream butter.
So tempura came from the Portuguese?
Yes, the cooking techniques. So that's that is the part of the big difference. And when Americans, Westerners, who are very much used to taste oil, much big flavor, have a kind of a taste buds, or I think it is not trained to taste some subtle delicacies, which we can. No, I shouldn't say, but that's a prejudice. But that's we can do, and it is all about the training of our palates. So, if someone is interested in Japanese cooking, and be trained 1 year, 2 years, and I everyone can master the how to receive or how to enjoy or how to do
how to taste.
Taste, yes.
So, you think everyone can be taught to taste?
Not everyone. Maybe some people cannot get on a bike or just. I am sure there are some limitations, but who are eager to be trained, plus have to be, yes.
If you have a strong
to
desire.
Yeah.
And you have to focus on it. You have to think about tasting.
Yeah. And one more thing about Japanese cooking. This one, I am such a pleasure to teach here. And one of the classes which I teach, Japanese cooking course, the essentials of Japanese cooking. And thank you very much for just having me. And in this course, I always explain why the people think Japanese cooking is very difficult. But how, well, we can do it, so everyone can do it. And you just follow the rules. In Japan, we have many rules, and you have to train to follow. And if you follow, you have to, you don't do this, that, derail. You have to do the same thing, and then just do every day better and better one thing. And we, Japanese cooking followers, we imported this philosophy from China. It is... In Japanese, we say go-gyo. It is five elements philosophy. The universe is built with earth, tree, fire, metal, water. And each is tied to flavor, cooking techniques, the color of the food, even east and west, so many things. And we use these five elements, or like in nature, when fire, there is a fire, you need water. When to make a fire, you need wood. So everything is inter. What do you say?
Related. Interrelated.
Thank
yes.
you. Each other to make balance mm-hmm. and good balance. So have to bring this balance, the universe balance, mm-hmm. to our cooking.
Can we hold it there? And we're going to come right back.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
So welcome back. You're listening to Chef's Story, and I'm Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and today we're at the International Culinary Center, and I'm incredibly intrigued and pleased to have as my guest Hiroko Shimbo, who is a chef, a caterer, a cookbook writer, and true mentor.
No caterer.
No catering? Oh, I thought. Oh,
yes. Yeah. Catering, or I do events. Cook,
you do events
with the companies.
Oh, with companies, yeah, but not your own catering
no.
company. But she is incredibly well respected among the food community in the United States, and I want to get back to cut you off kind of fast because I find this an interesting topic, the question of balance. And I think that in your culture, in the Japanese culture, almost everything you do in your life has this sensibility about balance. And you have it in your food all the time, from the time you are conscious of food. I think it's told to you about why you eat the food and how you eat the food. Can you tell me if you see any balance in a hamburger or a cheeseburger? And what does that say about Americans?
Okay, Well, maybe there is a balance. Well, I never analyzed the hamburger, so I cannot say. But going back to these five, so the five elements are tied to color. So which means we have to have five color ingredients. And everyone knows that different color ingredients has a different nutritional value. So that makes sense. And everything is tied with flavor. So sweet, salty, sour, bitter, hot. This came from China, so hot exists here. But there is not much hot in Japanese cooking. So as you heard, there is a bitter. In America, people don't like bitter flavor, and they just push salty, sweet, salt, vinegar, acidic. But have to balance this, incorporate. And meaning when you choose some, say, vegetables, some veggies has bitter flavor. And that's very important to pull into your meal. So have to balance. Nothing should be dominant. So when you taste a Japanese meal, nothing dominates your palates. Everything supporting each other, the stock, the veggies, chicken or meat, that's the kind of concept. Then five elements is tied to five cooking techniques. So came from China, the frying, that's not much in Japan. Simmering, steaming, grilling. Oh, okay. Hold on. Raw. And what's... that's five. So when we serve even casual home meal, or when you have kaiseki, formal elaborate meal, it comes with many courses, and they include everything. So
it's all, it revolves around the five cooking techniques, the five elements in the balance of the world.
Right.
And it's very seasonal, I take it, as
yes.
well.
Yes. Thank you very much, Dorothy.
My observation.
Very, important thing.
What is your take on Americans saying, I want to go to eat Japanese food, and what they really mean is sushi and sashimi? Is that Japanese food?
When you ask small Japanese kids, what's your favorite? They say spaghetti, sushi. Maybe comes on the second. And the sushi means, this is maybe, I don't know. Well, not just the rolls, but real sushi, nigiri sushi. Mm-hmm. So sushi is popular, but we are not eating just the sushi.
At home, is sushi eaten, or is it different food? I was told that sushi was sort of an outdoor food that you can make outside. There's no cooking involved. You could buy it from a stand on the street. But it's really not part of a real meal. Like, would your mother make sushi at night for dinner?
She did particular types of sushi, not nigiri sushi. To make a nigiri sushi, you have to have at least five different kind of fish. Or to buy very fresh fish to make sushi, just better to go to eat out.
Right.
But she made chirashi sushi, which is tossed sushi, in which sushi rice is tossed with some cooked veggies, sometimes cured fish, that kind of sushi, or roll. Not the inside out, but traditional roll.
Raw. What was your favorite meal growing up as a kid?
My mother's beef tongue stew.
And beef tongue stew.
And fried chicken and cabbage, rolled cabbage.
Rolled cabbage. What would there be stuffing in the rolled cabbage? Would they stuff it with?
Stuffed with rice, ground pork, onion, sauteed, that kind of.
That sounds just like what my Slavic mother made. Ground pork, onion, maybe a little tomato sauce on there. That was how do you perceive yourself? You've been in New York a long time now. How many years?
17 years.
17 years. So, you feel yourself as a New Yorker?
I think so. I am hung between Japan and America.
Mm-hmm.
When I am here in New York City doing whichever I want to do work, I am the happiest. Of course, I go back to Japan. I have to see my mother. I love my culture. I love my Japanese food. But once I found, there is no place 100% perfect. But here, I have more happiness. I don't.
Well, you're not a parasitic. You're married now. You're not a parasitic single, right? So you can go back and not be a parasitic single. But do you? If you went back, and I hope you don't feel like a prisoner here, being married. If you go back to Japan, and live, would you be in that prison as a married woman?
No, I don't want to do it.
This is really, really interesting. You know, in this day of technology and, you know, with smartphones and things like that, we're seeing young people all over the world rise up against perhaps their age-old cultures saying, I don't have to live like this. Do you see Japanese women rising up and demanding to have more freedom in their life, more say?
Well, more say is I don't want to get married. Career-wise, just so very difficult to break into. Well, interesting thing is Abe, the Prime Minister Abe, one of the way to tackle with the shrinking age of the population in Japan means shrink Japan. Mm-hmm. And he said at the Davos, I think, we have to bring more women into our workforce.
Yeah.
So give more opportunities,
right.
Build more. Still, I think if you are married, you are expected to leave the company. Mm-hmm. Or if you take birth, maternity leave?
A maternity leave, yeah.
Maybe
you don't come back.
You cannot come back, or you cannot compete with other people.
Ah, right.
So he says we have to fix these problems.
Mm-hmm.
He says, but no one is doing to change.
Mm-hmm.
And Japan is the, along with South Korea, the wage gap is the largest
between
in the world.
Women.
Industrialized countries.
Well, it seems like quite a challenge. I know a lot of people who live in two different countries, and you know, here in America, we have so many people that come from different cultures. And even if you didn't, you know, I grew up in a household that three of my grandparents were immigrants. So, you know, and with different kinds of backgrounds. So you're one step away from another country. But Japan seems so different, what does a restaurateur, how are the restaurants different in Japan? If you want to grow up and be a chef, here you can come to cooking school here, you go to work, and there's a good chance you can own your own restaurant pretty easily. Not super easily, but pretty easily. Is the same true in Japan?
Yes, there are many good cooking schools. So they study, graduate from it, goes to the catering company, or open his own restaurant after working some years at different restaurants. And also, it is famous for Japanese French chefs travel to France, apprenticeship, mm-hmm. come back, and making fabulous Japanized French. Japanized French means maybe use less cream butter and use Japanese seasonal ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
So very interesting, and mm-hmm. they do so well.
Do women have the same opportunity to be a chef and have their own kitchen? Their own.
I think women chefs are increasing. And
oh,
I
that's
think
good to hear.
There is an opportunity for women.
Uh-huh. Well, we're going to have to close pretty soon. And so I have some last questions to ask you on what are your favorite Western dishes? How do you cook Western dishes? Do you like do you have some favorite restaurants you could share with us? And
yes, I love short ribs.
Oh, yeah.
The braised, the short ribs.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like? I love good pasta dish,
mm-hmm.
handmade, cooked al dente, sauce is perfect, kind of. What do I like? I am not a cheesy or pizza kind type of person, but some very thin margarita.
Oh, yeah, pizza margarita.
This, yeah. That's wonderful.
Do you have a favorite restaurant here in New York?
Here in New York, one of the restaurant is the, do you know Contra?
Yes, Contra. It's one of our graduates,
yes,
Jeremiah Stone. Yeah,
that's one of my favorite. And what's the name of the? Oh my goodness! In Brooklyn, there
Roberta's, where we have.
He worked for Lou Belonoladin, and he opened his own restaurant. What's the very good?
Okay, well, we'll come back. We'll figure it out. We'll have our writers write in, tweet us on that one. And can you give us an insight to what do you go to eat in Japanese restaurants in New York? Do you have any favorites?
Yes, I have the Kyoya.
The Kyoya.
Kyoya.
Oh, Kyoya.
K Y O Y A.
Oh, Kyoya. And where is that?
In East Village.
In the East Village. All right.
And Chef Sono, very interesting story. He came here as a worker for Toyota, car company.
Uh-huh.
He quit. He started an apprenticeship at the Japanese restaurant.
Yes.
And then he's one of the, I think, top Japanese chefs in New York City working.
All right. Well, that's on that note, thank you. I think now we know where to go and eat very good Japanese food. And I'm going to look for the five elements.
Thank you.
So, Hiroko, it's been a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you very much, Dorothy.
Thank you. I feel like I have a little better sense of when next time I eat Japanese food. Thank you. And I want to do a shout out to Robin Cohen and Jack Inslee, our producers. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.